And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
This is the Hagman and Hagman Report, coming to you live from our radio and television studios in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania. Glad you can join us. Welcome. We have listeners. I want to say hello to Frank and Henry, listening in Germany, and also Don, Michael, Keith, and listening from the UK, where it's a little late there. And of course, all listeners across Europe, Australia, New Zealand, all across North and South America, Central America, and Canada. My goodness. Well, as if that's not part of North America, right? Well, I want to say welcome and let you know that we've got two websites, HagmanReport.com. That's HagmanReport.com. That's for show prep. That's for information that you need to know that we feel is important, presented to you in analytical form, sometimes just straight information. Last weekend, that was a cutting-edge platform for news about the bombing in New York and also in New Jersey, and also the stabbing in Minnesota. And of course, that integrates with our social networking. Follow us on Facebook. Of course, follow us on Twitter as well. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. We'd recommend that. And also, if you're watching this via YouTube, we ask you that you do one thing, and that's subscribe to our YouTube feed. There's a lot of reasons for that. In this era right now, we are fighting censorship like you cannot believe. I'm going to do a report on this, and Joe and I maybe will do a report together on this at some point. The censorship is deeper and greater and more incisive than you may think. Now, they don't go after small, generally speaking, they don't go after small YouTube channels or small radio broadcasts. They go after the larger ones, the people with larger platforms like us. And so it's kind of a blessing and a curse in a way. The more exposure you have, well, seemingly the more popular you are, right? Well, yeah, that's true. But also you're on the radar of the enemy. Of course, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to really understand that. But what they're doing is they're coming at us. And other shows, InfoWars and Rick Wiles and other shows like ours, they're coming at us in a number of ways, and through a number of doors and windows, and they're digging holes and climbing over fences, and it's really interesting to watch this take place. Now, tonight we are going to have part two. This is going to be a great show tonight, and we expect a lot of problems. I mean, if we have problems tonight, you'll know why. Because tonight, this particular broadcast, we will be talking for the part two and the final part of Loretta Fuddy, the who, why, how, and behind her ostensible death. You know, everyone talking about the body doubles of Hillary, Diane Rodham Clinton. Well, pay attention to this show tonight. And I will say this. Rex is coming on, and when he dropped the investigation on my desk, metaphorically speaking, because he sent it to me, but when it was dropped on my desk, I looked at it. I read through every page, every footnote, every aspect of that. And I said, you know, great investigation. I just don't agree with your conclusions. And he said, why not? And I said, well, I just have a problem with that. He said, okay, let me address, you know, hit me with the most, deepest questions you have. And, wow. After he answered all of my questions, I looked at the evidence. And I went from being a hard sell to say, okay, you know, this is something. So the conclusion tonight on the Loretta Fuddy ostensible death, Just welcome everyone listening through Global Star Radio as well. Thank you for listening through Global Star. And thank Global Star. Thank you, Global Star, for everything that you do. They make this show possible. Portions of tonight's broadcast brought to you by Casper Mattress. Oh, am I excited about this. Casper is a sleep brand that created one perfect mattress and sold directly to consumers, eliminated that old commission-drawn inflated prices. In the its award-winning sleep service was developed in-house. It's got a sleek design. It's delivered in a small, hey, how did you do that kind of box? In addition to that mattress, to the mattress itself, Casper also offers an adaptive pillow and soft, breathable sheets. The Hagman family uses... We sleep on the Casper mattress. We use the sheets. And now, guess what? Go to casper.com/CFP radio. Go there. Go there. Do you have a dog? Anyone? We have a dog. You got to go to Casper, casper.com/CFP radio. That's casper.com/CFP radio. The reason I'm saying that is if you have a dog, they just came out with a brand new dog mattress. Oh, a dog bed. It's fabulous. That's casper.com/CFP radio. casper.com/CFP radio. More on that later. Joe, we got a special treat too. We were talking right before the program. We're trying something new out.
Yeah, we are. What we, have been working towards and planning on doing is when we bring guests on is to be able to not only bring them on through audio so people can hear them across Global Star and Blog Talk Radio as well as YouTube, but when you're watching on YouTube, you only get the audio of the guest. So what we're trying to do now, and Eric's very close to figuring out from working very hard on how to bring the video of the guest along with the audio, you know, which would be a big improvement as we do interviews, being able to see one another and look at the person we're interviewing, their facial expressions, how they present themselves. It's a great addition, especially to a video venue from the radio show.
Yeah, I got to tell you, if this
works, we're test piloting something tonight.
The actual computer, as I've said before, the actual computer to get this done is
like
price
of a car.
Okay, seriously, the it requires a computer.
Unless you're talking about my car.
Well, in that case, yeah.
I'm just kidding.
But folks, seriously, the computer that we need to get this done, to take us to an entirely new level of broadcasting, is the price of a car. So when I was in the studio and I heard, Rob was in my office and it's adjacent to the studio, and I hear this rustling in the studio. I'm thinking, what the heck's going on? So I came out and here's Eric. He's got his baseball cap on backwards. He's got, you know, his work boots on with his shorts, and his legs are sticking out from underneath the desk, and he's got wires everywhere. I thought he was making an IED, man. I didn't know what was going on here.
And the way he looks with his face, double concern.
Oh yeah, you know. But anyway,
he hasn't shaven since 1999.
So I said, "Hey, Haji, what are you doing?" And he said, "No, you know, I think I got an idea. Maybe we can at least get a system to work while we're, you know, saving money for that computer." So to try it out, we have from our southernmost office in the United States.
Zika capital of the
That's
world.
Right. Zika right. Vaccinated man, JD from NeptuneDiaries.com. That's JD. JD from NeptuneDiaries.com. JD is on. Let's push the button, see if he can come on. Hey. All right.
Does it work? Can you guys see me?
We have a short delay on our video screen, so we won't know for about 20 seconds.
I can see him on Eric's equipment there. JD, thanks for coming on. Now, before the show, we were talking about a number of different things about Hillary Clinton. My goodness. First of all, do you think there's rumblings that she's not going to, she won't be debating Trump. I'm hearing rumblings of that. What's going on with Hillary?
That would just be a very big disappointment for me. I want to see that so bad. It's like the movie that I want to see, you know? It's the new installment of Star Wars for me. I've suddenly become a political aficionado. So that will be a disappointment, Doug. But, you know, with the things that are going on right now, I mean, I posted a video on Hagman Report this morning. They're doing all sorts of CGI video stuff that I would do. And they're playing a game. So I don't really know. I actually don't know what to believe anymore. As every day goes by, I feel like I'm in the Matrix.
Okay, well, I do have a question. I was talking to Ted Brewer about this as well. You mentioned earlier, and this is amazing. that video clip, and it's on your video, I think, HagmanReport.com, just, or HagmanandHagman.com. It's on our YouTube site. But the guy with the cell phone holding it up and videotaping Hillary, right? And you can see the back, or you can see the picture part of his cell phone, and no Hillary. I mean,
well, not only that, but there was a whole other one where somebody was with their cell phone videoing everybody else with their cell phones, and nothing was on screen. It was just it's so virtual sci-fi reality now. I don't know. I mean, the Obama stuff, some of the Obama stuff looks like CGI to me. I mean, I really don't know. But I'll tell you what, it's that whole power given to, you know, the image of the beast thing. I mean, that's where we're at, guys.
Absolutely. And, you know, one thing that we have seen that has been proven is the CGI effects on the crowds, making it appear during Hillary rallies that there are thousands of people in the crowds, from the positioning of green screens and the way that they, seat the audience of a few hundred that are there. And then they go and take these pictures that are computer generated, showing that she has thousands of supporters in the arena. And they post these as, you know, the pictures of the rallies and whatnot. And then I did stumble across and watched a few of the videos that pertain to basically her being invisible. People are wondering if the event, if this wasn't just, you know, pieces put together from past events and, you know, basic, you know, walk through with Clinton to make it look like she's at this event. And with so few people in attendance at her events, it's going to be hard to find anybody who was there, minus reporters who were covering for her anyway. But I believe you are exactly right and onto something, that this new generation of Hollywood, because of Hollywood and the CIA's work with Hollywood, they really could fake any event on TV and make it look real. And most people would not question it.
I agree. I mean, I am legitimately flipped out that, you know, I mean, it's one thing to have people running around like, you know, with the 9/11 stuff. People have said to me, those planes weren't there, you know, that was CGI, and there's been a bunch of conspiracy theories about that. Well, I can put that to rest, because for sure there was a plane that smashed into the building. I saw the second one, hands down. So maybe that is a little stretch for me. But see, then we get into that whole Project Bluebeam thing, right? So what if, can you imagine if in fact that was a CGI plane that they were, like, you know, sending through the air so that all these different video cameras could actually have caught that? You know, maybe it was an explosion. I just don't even know anymore. I mean, legitimately, fellas, I was looking through the, you know, my camera lens when I saw the plane hit. And if they are blue beaming this stuff, we are screwed. Sorry.
Yeah, and one of the things you and me have talked about this in the past, that so many people believe that those planes that hit the Twin Towers on 9/11 were holograms, some in part because they saw the explosion and not the second plane come in. But you, as you said, were there. You captured the plane come through through your camera lens. So in your eyewitness account, it's as real as, I mean, anything else you see in the real world, correct?
Yeah. Actually, the crazy part about it is it was actually unreal, right? So it literally, but because we live in such a weird, you know what it felt like? It felt like being at Disney when I was at the movie park and they were showing how they do stunts and stuff, and they were exploding things. That's what it felt like. It didn't seem real. So when they, like, true terrorism, it's what's happening now, right? Like, there's another thing that just happened in South Beach where there's a guy right two blocks from me running around with a mask on, you know, on the top of an apartment building on a balcony with an AK-47, and the cops raided it, but you don't hear about that on the mainstream media.
I did see that.
So
the photographs from the perch where he was,
yeah,
and a sniper
that's
rifle.
Two blocks from me.
Yeah.
Yep. Two blocks. So I can tell you this. I for sure. Now listen. Right down the block from where I live, I have all, you know, Pakistani guys who are my friends who, you know, work in the convenience stores and hardy har har, like, you know, the vice president. But it's true. They own a whole bunch of convenience stores, and I witness to these guys. I go in, I give them Bibles. I tell them about Jesus. They're like nominal Muslim guys, right? But I can tell you this. In all of South Beach and the upper levels where the money's being spent at these really nice, you know, new condominiums and stuff like that, you've got packs, and I mean literally packs, of guys between the ages of 18 to 35, all dressing cool in their American-style stuff, you know, trying to blend in. So it's not surprising to me. This is a hugely touristed area, and so... you know, terrorism's on the way. That was evidenced by Orlando. I definitely think that you know, we're in for some rough sailing ahead, for sure. The real terrorism, the kind of terrorism that makes you not want to go to the grocery store, not the kind that's like, you know, two huge buildings that are iconic falling down before your eyes like it's a movie, right?
Interesting distinction you just made there, because a lot of people, especially now, 15 years post 9/11, don't look at the Twin Towers at New York City Ground Zero, at Pittsburgh and the Pentagon as, you're right, terrorism. At least not in the manner, terrorism not in that way that they would be affected, because of the iconic nature of the buildings, specifically the Pentagon and the Twin Towers. Now, on the other hand, what happened in New York City with that bomb on Saturday, that's different, as was the race in New Jersey. Much different. You're right. It's a difference. There's a distinct difference there. So you're right. Let me ask you this. Now, you've been watching this. You've been making, doing videos on this. You've been doing commentaries on this, JD. Let me ask you about, what do you see happening with the elections?
I'm having so much fun.
Hey, JD, one second. We're getting some real nasty feedback.
Let's get a sit rep from Eric. Are we burning the processors? No, it's just your mic, Eric.
All right.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That happens sometimes. Sorry about that. The election. I'm very excited. I've never seen anything quite like this. So, you know, 4 years ago with you know, Mitt Romney and all that, that was a lot of fun for me to watch. It was sort of, I believe at that time, people were just starting to really become aware of everything that was going on in the Illuminati conspiracy world. That really came online. And now, I think that it's so mainstream to a degree, people are seeing right through stuff. So with Trump, it's an interesting thing to watch, because I don't know what to think anymore. Because on one hand, I believe that God could literally have set Trump apart and have spared him and saved him for such a time as this. But at the same time, I can totally see that he didn't do that, and that, you know, he's still using him, but that Trump is just the ultimate insider. So all I know is this, is if these people with badges didn't want Trump where he is, all they would have to do is say, here you go, folks, we have a search warrant and we found some terrible things in Donald Trump's house.
There are a number of ways that they can tear this candidate down. I, for one, believe, you know, the scenario you just laid out is less plausible. I believe in their grand fashion that they would like something more spectacular, from, you know, the CIA's heart attack gun to a public assassination to, there's just a number of possibilities. But one thing is for sure, the media has done any and everything they can to shield Hillary Clinton from all the, not only the scandals that she's accumulated as, from the beginning of her political life, all the way back to being a lawyer in Arkansas. And they've shielded her through all her mistakes that led to Americans dying in Benghazi, the availability of espionage due to the unsecure nature of her email server, to the lies that she's told the American people. I mean, I think this person, I mean, we look at Obama as being lawless and a liar. You know, you want your doctor, you can keep your doctor, and just all these things he's promised, everything is the opposite. And it's the same way, if not worse, with Hillary Clinton, even to the point where she takes talking points about that criticize herself, like the pay-to-play scandal, and turns it around into a headline against Trump. Oh, Trump's pay-to-play, situation. And she's done this with a lot of these issues, including the foundation,
it's upside down,
Trump's
world.
Foundation, and the charity issue. She's bringing up issues about Trump paying off $250,000 illegal debt with charities when she stole, you know, $1 billion from the people of Haiti and the relief funds that came after that big earthquake when most of America chipped in to help rebuild Haiti.
Yes. Now, what's fun for me, right, is simply this, right? I figured out if I watch television, right, I start to literally feel hatred.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I got over that. Now what I do is when I watch this, I just watch it knowing what the outcome of all this stuff is. And I have realized that if the TV can literally broadcast these signals and show me these things that I don't know if they're real or not, and I can feel hate, then I need to really watch out.
Yep.
And so I have absolutely cut back on a lot of my media intake in that regard. However, I can tell you this, that it's funny to me to watch them scrambling, because I believe that the father is like thwarting things as they go along, you know, to serve his purpose. And so I just think it's great. I love watching these people make their plans and watching them just come to naught. Because, fellas, I have to tell you this. I mean, I really do believe that we're literally on the precipice of everything that we've ever thought about happening. I think mm-hmm. we're right there. We're in bizarro world. Evil has become good. Good has become evil. The gays came out of the closet and they said it's not a mental disorder. And now the Christians have been stuffed into the closet and they're saying Christianity is a disorder. So that's coming down the pipe.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
They're making us look like the kooky ones. So look at, there's been a total role reversal. It's unbelievable.
Through the violence of Islam, they're also using that to lump in Christians and say, you know, look at the violence that Christians have committed, even quoting, you know, times from the medieval times from the Catholic Inquisitions, trying to tie that into, you know, the history of Christian violence. And what they're doing is trying to give people such a bad taste in their mouth for religion that it won't matter if you're Buddhist, if you're Muslim, if you're Jewish or Christian. They want to do away with religion once and for all. And even the New Age writers have said as much, that they're going to have to remove or join all the religions together in a one world religion type movement mm-hmm. that removes Jesus from salvation role and, you know, basically props man up as a savior, and that man would be the coming Antichrist. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure in his place in the meantime, they will make do with what they have. But that is the goal. Not only Christian religion, all religions are out. And I think that's one of the key planks for this rise of ISIS and, you know, the radical jihadi that we see.
Mm. And this ties in with Heiser thing, what you just talked about, how they're trying to form this one world religion. So you guys had on Dr. Michael Heiser
mm-hmm.
And his book, The Unseen Realm. And basically, when he talked about how they took certain things out of the Bible, right? They took certain things out of the Bible. Well, one of the things that they took out of the Bible, you know, when Jesus says the Lord's Prayer and he teaches us how to pray, he said, "Hallowed be thy name." And if you think, what is his name? People will sit there and go, whoa.
That's right.
Not really sure. So I can tell you why they switched that out. Why this? Because, you know, their plans go for hundreds of years. They don't have these plans that are like 2 weeks out. They're long term. So what they thought was, hey, if the goal is to have a one world religion at the end of this, what we'll do is we'll take out the name of God, which is YHVH or Y, you know, Yahweh, Yahuwah, you know, what, Jehovah, whatever you choose, but they took it out, right? YHVH, they swapped it with capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D. They did that over 6,000 times. Why did they genericize the Father's name? I'll tell you why. Because now the Pope is trying to do this one world government, right? if he tried to bring the Muslims to the table and said, oh, we all worship the God of Abraham, Jacob, and Isaac, right? The Muslim, and then he said his name is Yahweh, the Muslims would go, not a chance. Not a chance. But since it's Lord and it's been generic, you know, it's a generic name, they can buy into that. So, you know, there are conspiracies upon conspiracies upon conspiracies. So it's all fun. But back to the whole Christianity being put in the closet and being a mental defect, just wait till it comes out that we actually believe in, you know, angels coming down and having sex with women and creating giants. I mean, you know, they're going to come for us with straitjackets. It's going to, and then we're going to be like with the guns, and it's going to be like these crazy kooky gun people that believe in, you know, the craziest stuff ever, but bring it on, baby.
Cling
Let's
to
go.
Guns and religion, as Obama said in the 08 campaign. And you're right, you know, Christians definitely need to stand firm in their faith and be ready for the oppression, persecution that is going to obliterate the freedom of speech in the religious realm for good. And it is coming. Well, JD, it's been great. Thank you for testing our equipment, seeing how it works, as well as adding your insight
to
the...
Before we let you go, Blessed Day Ever t-shirts.
Blessed Day Ever.
Blessed Day Ever. Where to get them?
Yeah, blesseddayever.com. Blesseddayever.com. That's one of my little projects. Well, the way that I see it is this. I see in South Beach people running around with their t-shirts, and they've got, you know, Ralph Lauren or Skull and Bones or whatever. They've got all this devil stuff on their t-shirts. And I thought, what an easy way to preach the gospel, get the gospel out without, you know, literally put it on your t-shirts.
Absolutely.
Thanks, brother.
Be the walking advertisement for Jesus Christ and his gospel.
All right. We are, you know what, Joe? We've got such a great crew, staff, family. Thanks, buddy. Really appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, guys. Bless you. God bless you guys. All God right. bless you, listeners. Take care.
Thanks, JD.
Go ahead, Joe.
We will be right back with our second installment with Rex, the aviation expert, dealing with the Loretta Fuddy death.
Good stuff coming up.
The mysterious plane crash on December 11th, 2013. Part two right after this.
Back, exposing the playbook of the globalists, exposing or deconstructing, conducting a post-mortem, giving you the anatomy of a lie. Very pleased to bring forth an investigator. I'm going to say an investigator because I have read investigative reports that don't even come close to what we're about to see. Yesterday, if you haven't done so already, get the background on the strange death of Loretta Fuddy from yesterday. Rex was our guest. He's rejoining us now, making the case, presenting to you, I should say, evidence that everything we know with respect to this situation is a lie. And it's not just a lie, but a contemptible lie for cause. The cause being they had to get rid of the gatekeeper of Obama's long-form birth certificate out of the picture. The reason being, of course, is the smoking gun that it is. It gives you insight into who this man is and the lie that's been perpetuated upon the American people. And this is, folks, this the bigger picture here. Just keep in mind the bigger picture. We're going to go through the minutiae or the details of the event, the consequences or result of the investigation. But keep in mind always the bigger picture. The bigger picture is to the takedown of this country. And this is what we're witnessing. Without any further ado, we're going to bring on Rex for a continuation of our jury, appealing to the jury or presenting to you, the jury, a case that outlines the strange death, ostensible death of Loretta Fuddy. Rex, thanks for rejoining us tonight, sir.
Good evening, Doug. It's good to be with you again.
Yeah. Well, we left off yesterday. It was kind of, you toss a lot of information our way, and I got a ton of emails. I mean, just pages upon pages of emails saying, hey, you better bring them back. And not only that, make sure you have a food tester for Rex. And of course, you're back. Now the food tester is up to you. of course, making light of the situation. But thanks for coming back. And where do we go? Where do we start here? Since you're in the first seat, shall we say, in the courtroom, where do we start?
Well, I thought we might leave aside the things we talked about last night and go on to some other things. You're very good at recapping things, and I know you've already had some of your program already. But I thought we might continue this evening with Image 55, which is a depiction of the Kalaupapa area, and that's very unique. Kalaupapa was an historically secluded leper colony since 1866, and it's a place you don't usually go. That is, you need permission, and the Hawaii Department of Health controls the permissions, and those just aren't given out to anybody. Everyone that comes there has to have that. They don't have rental of motorized vehicles. The only thing that you can rent if you want a tour there is a mule or just hike. And they don't have overnight tourist stays. Everything is guided tour only. But as far as the water that this airplane crashed into, that's also very unique, in as much as there are very shallow areas and pools that are inset within shallow areas. So if you're videoing what might be going on, and you have experience with Hollywood stages and television programs, as some of these players in our scenario did or do, you could use this, for example, to be filming underwater where it appears to be 25 feet deep, and then someone could be standing on a ledge just a stroke or two away and take a rest as one stood on a very shallow area. And if you go to the image B2, we could look there, and we could see some of the bathymetric map, they call it. And that bathymetric map shows this area where the plane went down. The Salver president says it was 200 to 300 yards from shore, and it's depicted on that bathymetric map as a little yellow, I'm sorry, green segment, and the numbers are there in meters, and we note very close to that yellow little segment that's there, there is a little circle and a one. That means very near to where they put the aircraft down, there was an area that was only 1 meter deep. In other words, 3 feet deep. So if you do that, if you land an airplane on such a shallow area, well, it's nothing like the open ocean. In fact, you might hit something on the ground, the ocean floor. And there's a lot of evidence that suggests that's exactly what happened. And we'll talk about that as it comes along. But it's not just your average open ocean area. And that was unique with what the NTSB report suggested, that is, that this aircraft crashed into the open ocean. But it wasn't at all. And it, the report suggested, the NTSB report suggested that the pilot had rolled the wings flat, and that he had either a flat or a nose-high attitude of the aircraft. But that turns out not to be the case. That is, the evidence contradicts that entirely. And if you're able to pull up the image B1, we can see the very last frame before the aircraft impacts the water.
Rex, let me stop right there. We just have numeric values assigned to each image. I'm looking at the...
some of the higher numbered ones. In fact, it's one of the highest numbered ones.
Okay.
IB1, can you find that?
Hang on.
The name of it starts with IB1.
Okay, I'm going to get... Eric's helping me here, so...
okay.
All right, so...
well, let me describe it, and hopefully we'll be able to bring it up soon, or deal with it later. But in any event, that's the last frame of the crash video. That is the second portion. There was a takeoff video and a crash video. and this is the last frame before the craft hits the water. And we can see very clearly that the NTSB report somehow got it wrong. That is, the aircraft is clearly in a very, well, we'll call it a somewhat gentle left bank, and the aircraft is nose low. And that will make for a, as one of the passengers would later say, an abrupt stop. That is, the slowing down and possibly impacting the ocean floor was somehow worthy of the words abrupt stop. So those things aren't really surprising at all when you look at that bathymetric map again that we just looked at. However, if we look at the FAA report that came out, or that was that recites what the pilot and others said to the FAA, the representation was that, and it apparently came either from the pilot or the commuter airline owner, though it's not attributed, it must have been, however, one of those two, because it came the evening of the crash. But in any event, the representation by one of those two, or both, was that the aircraft was thought to lie between 400 and 1,000 feet down. And it would seem that that representation, accepted apparently by the FAA, caused them not to send a representative to the crash site. So neither the FAA nor the NTSB sent a representative to inspect the crash site. And the FAA's incident-accident report claims that the area was inaccessible. Though if we consider that information on the bathymetric maps, it should have been entirely accessible. And in fact, there's a there's an image that occurred. If we can go to image 08, an image appeared on the internet within 2 days of the crash, and it appears to show a craft that's sitting just maybe 10, 15, 20 feet below the surface. And let me credit the pilotlaw.com people for that image. But anyway, it would be inexplicable why someone would come up with the idea that that plane was 400 to 1,000 feet down. I don't know exactly whose it was, but it certainly seems not to be correct, especially when we know the position on the surface, that is just 200 to 300 feet from shore, as represented by the person who, in fact, was in charge of the group that lifted the wreckage from the ocean floor. And that we'll see more of that. Okay. But in any event, am I still with you?
Yeah, yeah. And okay. Essentially what you're saying is the depth of the water was not much. I mean, it certainly was not 1,000 feet deep and hundreds of feet deep. It was, feet.
That area is entirely encircled by a line, a constant depth line, that represents 10 meters, in other words, 33 feet. So you'd have to believe, and if we look at image 56, by the way, we'll see an enhanced satellite view, and on that satellite view is a depiction to the very right side of where the aircraft approximately came down. And you see very shallow areas, and you see the deeper blue pools. And that was a reference that I made just a few minutes ago about what one could do with videography. That is, you could show what might be a 20-foot pool, and right along the edge of that, a person should be able to stand, especially since the plane had that area that had was just apparently 1 meter deep. So there are indeed outcroppings on the ocean floor, and we see that burbling water below the depiction of the aircraft if you're looking at image 56. So So it had a lot of characteristics that were very different from what one would call an open ocean.
Okay. All right. So the conditions under or where this smaller aircraft went down carrying Loretta Fuddy and eight others misrepresented in the media, misrepresented everywhere. All right.
Yeah. And if we can move to image 58, we see the plane in that area, and we see apparently people standing below the tail. One of the passengers there in the upper left image appears not to be supported by anything other than, well, he's got 12 to 18 inches of his torso or body and head out of the water. And there's another depiction of another passenger just below that who, without a life jacket, has almost half his body out of the water.
That made me do a double take. That one, yeah. Of all of the images, folks, if you're looking at this via YouTube, take a look at this, because this astounded me when, you know how you look at something and you know what you're seeing, but you're not paying attention. It doesn't compute. That image right there really got me.
Well, I'm going to say that there was an image recently within the last week or two of refugees floating in the water, and it had this very identical characteristic. That is, the image had been cropped so that it appeared everyone was floating in, who knows, deep water. But if one looked at the uncropped image, which also someone had, it showed that many of the people were standing in 2 and 3 and 4 feet deep water. So this is kind of an audacious, outrageous thing that's done again and again and found in the media. But anyway, we digress and move on. Let me just say that those two people appear to be standing in almost the identical spot. So maybe there was some little outcropping right there. But in the larger picture, if you look at the airplane and you look, say, at that open door where one guy is hanging onto the little ladder railing, and the door on top is open. If you look at the window just beyond that on the far side of the airplane versus the window on the near side, you see that the airplane is actually listing to the right. And we see, vis-a-vis the horizon, a little forward of the aircraft, that is, the water is well below the port wing. And that means the port wing is literally out of the water, which is verified by those visual characteristics. And the right wing is down. So one has to ask, how could that possibly be? Well, it would be a whole long discussion in terms of possible pontoon effects and so forth, but the long and the short is I passed all that information by a physics professor, and he agreed that it very much appears that there must have been some something holding up perhaps the left main gear of that airplane. But we'll go on beyond that since there's not really time here. But if we move to the next image, which will be 66, maybe we can move to 66.
Okay. All right. That would be the earlier and later picture? Or
yes, exactly that.
Okay.
And we see the pattern of the water against the shoreline and so forth. We know that the tide was ebbing at that point in time, and it appears that the picture on the right was approximately 20 to 30 minutes later than the one on the left. And we see some visual aspects, but the plane appears to be in essentially the identical spot as it was in the left picture. And if we look at that aircraft on the right picture, which is on the left end of the red line segment, we can look and see that that wing, that left wing, is indeed out of the water. So we have another confirmation of what happened there, that there might well have been something very shallow which caused the abrupt stop, which lifted that left wing. And we also know a fact that one of the passengers' seats, which and that seat was very close to the left main gear attach point. So that would have indeed, if the aircraft did indeed hit something on the ocean floor, it would have borne the brunt of the force of that slowing down or stoppage kind of thing. And that aspects of that seat broke loose from the floor and threw the passenger to the floor. That's the only seat in the entire place that had that effect. And that person had to be, that person was rather severely injured with several cracked ribs and a split sternum. So there's a lot of aspects that support the idea that this aircraft hit the ocean floor and more or less stayed there. As you'd expect, that once you hit the ocean floor, it's not easy to move. But if we... Pardon?
Okay. No, I completely understood. Yeah, all right.
Yeah. If we can move to image 76, we'll see what we
That's
call diver activity.
Passenger J and friends. Passenger J and friends, high diver activity. Okay.
Yeah. All right. This one of the passengers, whose initial is J, is repeatedly seen in front of or juxtaposed between the camera lens and things that are going on that just might be interesting. And we can see in the upper left picture that person is seated on top of the wing, which is also a very unusual place to be. But anyway, just ahead of that point or on the opposite side of that person are the two images to the right of that. And what appears to be happening there is some kind of equipment is being unfolded on the wing just behind where that person was. And in fact, the three people there all seem to be kind of put in a picturesque tableau, maybe just to obstruct things. And we can say that because it occurs so many times. That same male passenger is juxtaposed between things that are interestingly going on many times with Loretta Fuddy. But the images of those that what I've called diver equipment unfolding on the wing, those are things that just should not be there. That is, no passenger would have had baggage that just conveniently would be unfolded onto the wing like that. That's just amazing stuff. And the long and the short is we're going to see evidence again and again and again of military diver equipment. These are things that just do not belong in the scenario.
This
and if we can
amazing.
Back up to
sure.
If we can back up to image 72, we'll see more things in the scenario that they're just not supposed to be there. If we look in the lower right images and the lower middle picture, we see images of what appears to be some kind of electronic device, obviously waterproofed, and what you might even call them electronic fish. But they have some kind of antenna as their tail, in place of their tail, and those antennae are two different lengths, which to an electronics person says, aha, antenna, transmit, receive frequencies, yes, yes, yes. The conjecture would be, not without a lot of support, frankly, is that these may well have been part of an underwater network, a communications network, to relay signals. And this is a known problem. That is, if you want to communicate underwater, electronic equipment just doesn't go nearly as far as it does above water. And so you'd need this kind of equipment to build up a chain of communication, kind of like a fire brigade, to be able to establish a long-distance network. And that's indeed very likely to have occurred. We see other antenna-like equipment elsewhere, too. We'll mention that when it comes up. But anyway, other things in the scenario, we look at the videographer in the upper right, and he's got what appears to be kind of an iPod earpiece. He's only listening in mono. And the question would be, to what is he listening and why? But if one scours, as I have, the entire audio of this less than 19-minute scenario, there is not one instance where he's testing or checking the volume, for example. There's nothing in there that suggests he's managing his video or audio recording. And all of that taken together is pretty unusual.
You know what, Rex? I gotta tell you, I cannot think of any instance if I'm just, you know, if I just hit the water in a small plane and I'm out there as this allegedly is taking place. I can't think of any instance where I'd be listening to an iPad, iPod, or phone, or, you know, any kind of audio. Folks, am I wrong in this, or I don't know.
Well, okay. we're gonna cut to the quick and say that there's a lot of evidence of military trained divers in this scenario, and we know by our relationship with people who have done this kind of thing that they stay in communication with each other. And it would be very appropriate for people who are managing the scenario to be in communication. So that would have to stand as a very likely possibility. In any event, let me move on and we'll come to similar things later. That is, in the upper left picture, there's a guy who just happens to have been an Army Green Beret. And he's got something there in front of him which doesn't really look like it fit in the seat back or seat underneath in front of him. It's hard to imagine where it might have come from. So that's kind of the question, what would that be? Similarly, there's another black arrow just to his left, which appears to be the only piece of baggage-like thing that has stayed near the airplane. Now, many of the passengers reported there were currents and high winds and white caps and everything. And somehow, this piece stays right there. It doesn't get whisked away by the currents. It doesn't get blown away. It doesn't get washed away by any white caps. It stays around. So it's amazing about what that could possibly be. We'll come back to that. The lower left picture there shows the Hawaii Department of Health deputy director, who was obviously Fuddy's assistant, and he's watching closely over her. However, it's very curious that she's holding on to something by her left hand, apparently, there. And it appears to be red. Red is also called port, and that's very much a marine term. So something on one's left hand that is also colored red is an interesting marine concept, which I'm sure doesn't escape a lot of people's attention. But anyway, we can move on to other things. Man, and that would be, let's just move on to the next one called I-73, the bag. Since we brought it up, there's an image of the bag. And we see it in several places. As I say, it stays there underneath the tail for minutes until someone begins touching it and doing things with it. But I want to point out that in these successive pictures, the image of the bag changes. That is, it changes shape. It's not a rigid thing, even though it, in the first image, that is in the upper left, it appears to be about 80% out of the water. That is, it's Rex. Not a heavy bag. It Rex. Somehow floats.
Let's pick this up on the other side, since we're up against the break and you just started getting into this one. This is right where we'll pick up on the other side. Folks, you're listening to Rex,
aviation expert, computer expert, and a guy that just ripped through this investigation.
Has put together a fantastic investigation with visual help as well if you're watching on YouTube. This is part two of our two-part installment with Rex. We'll be back right after this.